Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome back to a winning edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast. I had to call Tim Kawakami. He loves wins.
All I do is talk about Warriors wins, except for like the 18 in a row where I talked about Warriors losses last season. But this is not last season. This is a new Warriors season.
Hey, they actually already now have more wins than last season. They were 15 and 50 last season. They're 16 and 13 now.
There you go.
For about 47 minutes tonight, I thought there was no way we were going to be talking about a Warriors win. No Draymond, no centers. Smiley Geach looked good, but he looked pretty good in Orlando, in the Orlando G League bubble. And then cold Steph Curry, 1-9 in the first half. He 1-6 in the third quarter. So he's entering the fourth quarter, 2-15 from three, and they're down 10. He's not going to play the first 6 minutes. It's over, right? I mean, the game's over.
Yeah, although, this is kind of old school Warriors where you're going to, like, no matter what, they can still do something. Like, it wasn't really that way, a little bit in the Dynasty years, but it wasn't that important game to game. But as they were building this up, there was that, like, okay, they still could do this. Like, you still got to stay tuned. You still got to, I'll admit in my head, I thought, oh, maybe this is going to be a terrible podcast because they're going to lose by 30. I actually was thinking that, but I didn't say it. I didn't slack it to Slater. I didn't tweet it because you just never know sometimes with this team. And usually it's with a barrage of step threes. That didn't come until the very end. He hits his last two after going 3 of 18. But this team's fought, it's stuck on the much criticized second unit fought through it, right? I mean, they were like basically even, and that's a win for the Warriors. You're just assuming they're going to get down 10. If they go into the fourth quarter down, they're going to get into the fourth, midway through, they're going to be down by a lot. And they fought through it, and I give them credit. And some guys that haven't been playing great played tremendous. Pascal had a hell of a game, and Bazemore was just unbelievable. And they got stronger, and they just kept them in the game, and they played the end of the third, all the fourth, and into overtime, and they looked fresher than I thought. Miami looked tired. They really looked dead, and it's like they played a back-to-back, which it wasn't a back-to-back for them, but they looked like they were just dead on their feet there, from about the middle of the fourth quarter all the way through to the end.
Yeah, if you were like analyzing this from like a league perspective, or let's say you were a national writer that was like, I want to write something off this game, you're writing about Miami. Yep. I mean, they're 11 and 17 now. They just lost to a Warriors team they shouldn't have lost to. And this is the Eastern Conference champs. Yep. Like, they are not in a good place right now. I believe they're like 12th in a bad conference right now.
Dragic is out. I mean, we know their issues, but they look slow. And they looked tired. And they just weren't getting, how many balls did Bazemore just outrun them to? The Warriors just got the loose ball and go. And
this is the edge. This is the team with edge. This is the team that does what the Warriors did to better teams typically. Yeah. And, you know, Adebayo, he's kind of been crowned a little bit. And, like, don't get me wrong, he had nice moments tonight. He clearly had the size advantage, but he still, like, he should do more. Like, he should have dominated that game today, I thought.
No. I mean, when he was in there, he just dunked on everybody. He just didn't seem that interested in doing it. I thought he looked tired. I thought he looks way slower than normal. And you do
need to mention the shortened offseason, right? We're talking about a Warriors team that, remember, there's that 9-month gap for a team like the Heat. They went to the last day in the bubble, which basically was like 3 weeks ago, essentially. So there's some of that. But from a Warriors perspective, what I wrote about, I mean, five people mattered in this game, and there were the five closers. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Pascal, who, you know, it's an interesting game for Pascal, because if you go look at his game log early in the season when he had that like 8-9 game stretch of just crazy production as a small ball center, and we thought, wow, they've like discovered his NBA career. He was scoring like 13-14 a game on like 11 shots in 18 minutes. It was just like come in, shoot a bunch, you know, go downhill, super high energy. Tonight he plays 32 minutes, by far the most he's played this season, the entire fourth in OT, which you asked Kerr about post game. And he only shot, I believe, five times in 32 minutes only. 4 of 5, 11 points, important points, big and one down the stretch. There were moments, particularly early, like his first stint was not good.
No.
But second half was. He had 7 rebounds, which doesn't sound like a ton, but this is a guy who averages, I think, fewer than 3 rebounds. It's an area of concern with him. So, yeah, I mean, like, it wasn't a typical Pascal-type game. But where
no Draymond. And
they needed him.
Maybe not, you know, Toscano Anderson's greatest game. I thought it was fine, but Kerr obviously had a reason to go with Pascal all the way down the stretch, and they really needed it. I mean, there's just a couple of those baskets. You know, they said all baskets are the same. No, a couple of his baskets were just huge. He played Adebayo fine. He stayed in front of him. Again, maybe partly that's because Adebayo was slow. And Adebayo still, you know, he still had his points. He still had his assists. Did not have many rebounds. But I thought Pascal just matched that and then looked stronger and stronger. And we can get to Bazemore, who, you know, game of the year for Bazemore. I mean, there's just no question. He just was everywhere. He was on defense. He was deflecting the ball. He was getting rebounds. That just tip
fouling
in. That
people.
Fouling people at the end. But so it goes. That's just going to happen, I think. That tip in overtime was huge. Just a player that I was saying he outheated the Heat. He did Heat stuff. He just was grit in there, and that's really important for the Warriors. And then when they're just playing all wings, these wings have to play tough. They have to play big guys. They have to play Olynyk, who was horrendous tonight, by the way. But they have to be in there with them. Jimmy Butler is taller than every single. I wrote that. I mean, he's taller than every single Warrior who played tonight. So guys like Bazemore and Oubre and Wiggins just had to play like power forwards. They had to play like centers. And Bazemore was particularly good tonight. Really, really good.
Yeah, he's fouling about 5 times per 36 minutes, which is the number one wing in the league fouling wise. I mean,
he's got to be giving up the most free throws per 36 minutes.
Well, I mean, you look at the per 36-minute fouls, and it's, you know, James Wiseman's up there. A bunch of centers are up there. You know, guys who – bigs foul more. They're protecting the rim. And then it's like Bazemore's the only small forward in the entire group of, like, the top 20. But he has these moments. And in these games, you know, I think a lot of – I think because they were trying to chase the Heat down instead of trying to protect the lead, I think that's why Pascal was playing over Toscano Anderson, right? Scoring, burst, punch. And I think – Bazemore fits a game like this. Bazemore, if you think about their comebacks this season, remember the Clippers comeback? Yeah. I'm trying to think about the Lakers comeback again. I can't remember how big a part of it Bazemore was, but I know he was a big part of the Clippers one. Yeah. That's his type of style, right? It's like high risk, high reward. And if you're down 10 in the fourth, you can play high risk, high reward, guys, because you kind of need to get risky with it. And if he is hot, if he does hit 4 threes as he did tonight, and he just creates, you know, steals, and he's gambling in passing lanes, like, you know, he's a good wild card to have on your bench, particularly when you don't have to rely on him on most nights, where if he's bad Bazemore or if you are protecting the lead, you can just sit him down. Yep. But he's been their best bench wing lately, much better than Damian Lee, to
be honest. No question. You know, he's He's a two-way guy who does some crazy stuff on both sides, but they kind of need that, you know. You know, I don't know if I'll call him a playmaker, but he can, you know, he can make a play or two,
particularly on Steph.
Yeah, particularly on that left-hand side. I don't know if he's going to make a lot on the right-hand side, as we saw with that layup, which was unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, Bazemore in that corner, the left corner, is pretty dangerous. Like he
said, he was parking lot pimping in the left corner. The term he used.
He is
to
good.
Marcus.
He is good on. He's not so good on the right corner, if just from anecdotal, but he's really good on that left corner. This is what you just kind of need to fold that in energy. You know, you need to fight through that second unit minutes, which they did, and then you hope that Steph shows up at the end. And he didn't show up exactly at the end. He showed up in overtime at the end, but. That's what superstars do. They're just like, at some point, you stay close, and that guy's going to carry you to the finish line. And, you know, I saw there are a lot of questions about Steph having the unwavering will and, you know, belief in himself. Well, of course, he's like, this is what he was like when he was 25, okay? We started asking the questions when he was 21 at Davidson. This is just who he is. He misses 14 shots in a row. He thinks he's going to make his next 14. This is just, that's why he takes those half-court shots. He's not afraid of them. He thinks he's going to make those half-court shots at the buzzer. So it's part of being great is believing you're going to make every shot. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you miss most of them. Tonight he missed most of them. He made the last two in overtime, and they win the game. You know, not just because of that, but if they didn't have that, they might not have won. They got Steph Curry. Even in a bad game, you still have Steph Curry. You're always within some amount of reach, and the opponent knows it too.
25 NBA players have made 25 or more threes in February. Two of them are on the Warriors. Can you name those two? I think you can get one of them.
It's going to be Steph Curry.
Steph Curry, 56
yeah,
of 123.
Way above 25.
Yes, leading the league and made threes in February, 56 of 123.
Well,
can you name
the
second?
The other one's got to be Wiggins, right?
Nope. Wiggins is not having a good shooting month.
Okay, he puts up the most.
He's 15 of 49. He shot the third most.
Kelly Oubre.
Oh, Kelly Oubre in February is 25 of 54 from three. He is actually, because Steph Curry went 5 of 20 tonight, he's shooting a better percentage in February from three than Steph Curry. He's got the seventh best three-point percentage of those high-usage NBA players in the month. He's been a very good three-point shooter for now about nine games.
Yeah, I mean, that's the normalization of stats. I mean, people always say that. Like, that beginning was so bad that the numbers were going to balance out. But he's a career, what we said, 32% three-point or whatever it was, and he was 35 last season in Phoenix, and the numbers were going to balance out if they just kept playing him. And I think we all thought it was too long. I think we all thought, how much longer can you go? I thought it was probably four or five games too long. But Steve Kerr remained patient. Going to write about this tomorrow. This is just who he is. He believes in, as he says, like, you miss a shot, that's okay. You're going to take another one. Don't miss a blockout. You know, don't miss a pass. Don't miss a defensive assignment. But if you miss shots.
Oubre missed a few of those, too.
He did miss a few of those. But he does other stuff. We know he does other stuff.
The talent is there.
Yeah, we know. He can finish. We know that he can rebound. We know that he can put pressure on the ball on defense. So you live with, you know, a monumental shooting slump to start the season. And now the numbers are balancing back. And so this is better than he would normally shoot. This is not what he is.
He's not a 46% three-point shooter.
Probably not. And so it balances out. You see what you got at the end of it, but now they're getting the good part of it. And he helps, and he certainly helps when you don't have a power forward, because he just basically takes the place of a power forward and just knocks people around a little bit. And, you know, he doesn't get every rebound, but you look and you see when the ball's bouncing around and you think Adebayo should have it, guess who's knocking away from it? It's Kelly Oubre.
31% from three now for the season, which is great. Like, that's a quick reversal, you know. As big a slump as or a hole as he dug himself in early in the season, I would have guessed it would have taken him. Like, even if he shot pretty well the rest of the way, I was like, this is going to take till April to climb back to 30. I mean, he's at 31. Yep. You know, he's to the point. I mean, he's done it for a long enough stretch now. Like, when he rises up for, you know, he's always open. That's the other, you know, something that must be mentioned. These are all wide open threes. But when he goes, you know, he went 4-7 tonight. When he rises up, I feel much differently about the confidence level of it going in than I did a month ago.
No question. And I'm sure he does too, which is part of it. Kerr's going to play him with Curry. He's just decided that. He's playing Oubre. And I thought that was a mistake just because I didn't see Draymond and Oubre being real good together. But if Oubre can back cut a couple times a game, and if he can get out of the corner when Steph's running there, which I guess he's doing that now, and if he locks himself in that corner when he should be there and just takes a feet set three-point wide-open shot, that helps the Warriors a ton. It helped. I mean, it just – It is what they need. It's not Klay Thompson, but just that with everything else that Oubre does, and that makes that starting unit look pretty good. Whether the center is Looney or now it's Toscano Anderson, I get it. I get what Kerr's doing. It took a long time. It took way long, and I would have put Damian Lee in there myself. But look where Damian Lee is now. And there you go. This is why he did not put Damian Lee in the starting lineup. I guess you could make the argument for Bazemore at some point, but Bazemore is good coming off the bench. Just somebody who can plug in and give them a different kind of energy. I give the Warriors credit. I mean, they stuck with them. They went out and got him. They might lose that pick now for him, by the way, Slater. I can't believe it, but I am now monitoring this, and they are right on the borderline of losing the protection on that first round pick.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It's going to depend on the East. Yep. To be honest, I do think, as bad as the East is looking right now, the middle of that conference, Boston's, I think, going to end the season 10 games over 500. A team like Indianapolis, like some, one, two, three teams will emerge. They'll beat up enough East teams below them, which will start tanking, right? Yep. We haven't even got to the point of the year where five East teams just start trying to lose every game. So, if I had to guess, I think they'll protect that pick.
It's amazing that we're having to have the discussion, though. I will say I did not think that this would be part of the discussion, even if the Warriors were in seventh place, which they currently are in the West. So, you're going to be in seventh place, but there's going to be five East teams ahead of them and possibly way ahead of them, and that's not the case. There's only three East teams ahead of them. And, one of the teams, we mentioned Indiana and the Boston, but the Knicks are like one of those. Like, so they're counting on the Knicks now. It's like this the East is just – a mess right now, they're like a half game behind the Bucks now, by the way, the Warriors are. It's just like, it's incredible.
They hopped Denver today. Which we've spent a couple weeks discussing the whole MVP conversation, and Jokic is up there, and part of the reason is like, well, Curry doesn't have the team success. Well, he's got a better record than Nikola Jokic's team right now.
Curry's going to be MVP. Warriors are going to lose protection of the pick. Like, all these things that we've just said, no way, are now in the discussion. It's the NBA. It's just this muddled NBA right now. You have some really, really good teams, and you have a lot of teams in the middle, and you have some atrocious teams. It's just this kind of stratified league right now. I don't think yet we're going to say the Warriors are in the conversation to be able to move up into that elite section, but hey, they go on a run here. They get Draymond back. I mean, who knows? They're in this discussion of like, hey, we'll see how good they are. They've deserved that. They're playing well enough to earn something. Like they get to 22-15. They're a pretty good team. And we'll see if they get there, but it's worth a discussion.
Yeah. Two of the surprises are in the East that have stunk you saw one tonight, Miami. Yep. And then Toronto has a very bad record too. So we'll see. Maybe that balances out at some point. So Kevon Looney is probably going to come back. It sounds like maybe the third or fourth game of this upcoming road trip. Wiseman, we should get more official word on Thursday, but he's trending towards that road trip too. Centers are coming back. Draymond, who, by the way, I should mention, missed the game because he came to the arena with a sore right ankle, which surprised them, and they ruled him out 5 minutes before tip. It kind of threw everything a whack. They started Michael Mulder in place of Draymond Green, but he's going to be back Friday, they think. And with the centers coming back, you talked to Steve Kerr on your podcast. Like, a week from now, what does this rotation look like?
You know, both you and I have been throwing around Wiseman as a second unit. I asked Kerr about that and didn't sound like that's where he's going to go. He sounded like Looney starting, Wiseman checking in at that 6 minute mark, and Pascal as a second unit small ball center, and then they figure out who closes from there, who closes the half, you know, then they just do it again in the third quarter, start Looney, Wiseman in that 6 minute mark in the third quarter, finish out the half or a quarter or close to it. Then Pascal starts the fourth, and then they decide how they finish. I just think they're just, you know, and Draymond's gonna play some center too, you know.
Well, that's my thing. Is that enough Draymond at center? You're basically ruling out the first 18 minutes of the half.
Yeah,
of Draymond,
you know, I don't think they want to. You know, again, we've seen a lot of it, and we know how well Steph plays and Draymond plays in this situation. I don't think they want to go much more than 4 minutes a half in it, and preferably maybe less than that, and maybe they go more. But you know, I think that'll be determined if they feel good about Wiseman. Hey, Looney could get hurt. You know, who knows? It doesn't mean that it's all locked in. But I just think they're generally going. Looney starts. Wiseman comes in. Pascal plays the start of the second and the fourth. Then they figure it out from there. That just, you know, that's very Warriors, right? It's very Kerr. And they make the adjustment there. I just think he's got in his mind, though, that Looney's the starter. In his mind, who's the starting center for the Warriors? It's Kevon Looney. And probably going to close with Draymond, and then you kind of
and they know they have to get Wiseman minutes.
They got to get Wiseman minutes. So you can't have a plan where he doesn't get minutes. And Pascal has a game like this, you and I back off of, you know, taking him out of that second unit role. I would be intrigued with Wiseman in that group, but you know, Wiseman and Wiggins together, you know, I would be kind of intrigued to see how that goes. And you could put Pascal in there too if you wanted. You don't have to go just all small forwards around Wiseman. But I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to keep Pascal in there for now. And they're just going to find Wiseman 5 minutes and 5 minutes, and maybe that's it. Or maybe they go to him again in the second and fourth quarters.
Yeah.
But
you know what else?
I don't think they're going to start James Wiseman. I'll tell you that. They are not doing that.
Well, there's a chance he comes back before Looney. Now, it might be one or two games. My guess would be they probably would just keep starting Toscano Anderson, and then, you know, Looney eventually takes that spot. He's another guy to talk about where does he end up as this shakes out. Maybe they start deactivating him for a few games to save some of the games, but he's been an important part of the rotation. And then the other factor to, like, throw into this mix is – this is a different part of the season. Guys are getting beat up. You're seeing Draymond Green with the knee trouble he's had lately. He has the ankle, which forces him to sit today. Part of the reason I don't think Pascal's been as effective is, like, he's clearly had knee problems. I mean, he's wearing that sleeve every game now. The right knee swelled up during the road trip after they got on a plane. He had to miss two games. So you can maybe spot rest.
Yep.
You know, you don't want to give Draymond clearly too many center minutes because it seems to wear him down. And, you know, I definitely could – maybe if Wiseman comes back and starts to look good, they go, Pascal, you know, sit a week, get that knee really, really right. Because they need him with that explosiveness that he just hasn't had in weeks.
Yep, no question. And they need – that jump shot takes a lot of lift too. So if he's not feeling good with his legs, that jump shot goes to hell. I can definitely see that. They've got enough bodies when they come back that they can spot, you know, they can definitely rest some guys for a couple games at a time. And I think, you know, Pascal would be one of those guys. Draymond, you know, hey, Draymond, take a couple games off. This has happened before. You know, the only guy that they can't have missed games is Steph, and he hasn't missed them yet. So
42 minutes tonight. For 42.
And hey, by the way, Steve Kerr put him back in at 7:21 mark, not the 6 minute mark. So I thought that might have, because he saw this was a gettable game. You know, it was even down 11. I think when Steph came back in, it was gettable. I mean, you could kind of feel it. Like Miami was not playing well, and you know they don't have James Harden and they don't have Kevin Durant. Where you go, okay, we're down 11. Forget about it. Jimmy Butler was okay, not looking. I mean, triple double, but it wasn't. It was a tough game for him offensively. This was a winnable game. Kerr went for it, and he played Steph 42 minutes. We'll see what that, you know, means on the next few games. But I think Steph looked fine at the end. So 36 minutes, and then sometimes he plays 38, and then you go into overtime, you play 42, 43. I think that's survivable with Steph. I think we've talked about that. He's in very good physical shape. And hey, now they go get some wins.
You know where the Warriors' next game is, right? Friday?
Is that not Charlotte? No, it's not Charlotte, is it?
No, they play somewhere else before.
Where? I'm trying to think. Orlando.
Orlando.
Okay, okay.
You know what else is in Orlando?
Smile Geach.
Get in a car. He's only like 30 minutes away from the arena.
I mean, one game. That's it. You proved your worth to the NBA. Come on back. Welcome arms.
I don't know if the NBA would be okay from going from one bubble to basically what they believe is their own, you know, the bubble they're trying to have with the team. Would they allow that? And then go right back to the bubble? Give them one NBA game while they need big minutes? I mean, against a bad Magic team, it wouldn't be like... I feel like if the Warriors were allowed to do it, I don't know if they can with all the quarantine protocols.
No, he'd have to go back into quarantine and then go back into the other quarantine probably.
He should probably keep playing in the G League. But you know, it's interesting. They're just in the city that the bubble's
in. Why don't they just get like Jonathan Kuminga for a game or two? I'd watch that.
I'll take Jonathan Kuminga for the next decade. By the way, the Wolves lost again tonight. They are, I believe, 7-22. Yeah. The worst record in the league.
They are the worst team in basketball. They are the worst team. And it almost doesn't matter anymore because, like, as you've written, like 1, 2, or 3, it's essentially the same if you're going to get that protection at 4, 5, or 6. They're going to be 1, 2, or 3, right? I think we can all surmise that they're
There's going to be a point, you know, like Oklahoma City is like winning more than the organization even wants. You know, there's going to be a lot of teams that have in over the next month are like going to actively want to lose, whereas the Wolves don't have that appeal, right? Because they don't have their first round pick. So I could see there's like a stretch of play where they play some of these tanking teams and like Towns has big nights. And like, could they escape the bottom three? Maybe. But they're not escaping the bottom like six.
No. I mean, that one I'm not watching as closely anymore. The funny thing is, okay, D'Angelo Russell's out. Maybe he's out for a long time. Does that make them better or worse for their record? I don't know. It seems to have very little effect, I guess, is that's the saddest thing about. You know, whether D'Angelo Russell plays on a bad team or not, it just doesn't seem to matter. That's bad. The Warriors are looking pretty good with that trade, almost no matter how the rest of the season works out. That trade is looking so good, better than I thought. I didn't mind, you know, the fit of it, that Russell wasn't going to fit. I clearly didn't believe that he was part of the future of the Warriors, but Wiggins came in, whatever. You got rid of Russell, so you got something else. And yeah, that pick was so important. If you get a good player plus the pick for D'Angelo Russell, wow, that is a crowning move for the Bob Myers front office, I think, in the last few years.
I will be writing about another Bob Myers move. It will be dropping on the site tomorrow because James Wiseman and LaMelo Ball will be meeting for the first time if Wiseman plays. They play twice in the next 7 days or so. An early checkpoint on the decision to take Wiseman over LaMelo. Look for that on the site. And Tim will be writing a column, I believe, off of his Kerr podcast. If you haven't listened to the podcast, TK Show on the app, go find that. Other than that, we will talk to you probably after that Hornets and Warriors game Saturday.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.